This is the TSN MMA show with Aaron Bronstetter and Bazooka Joe Valtellini.
Tyron Woodley retains the title in dominant fashion as Darren Till fails to land a single significant strike. The UFC women's flyweight title is vacant. Tatiana Suarez puts on a flawless performance only to be outdone by the top strawweight contender Jessica Andrade. Conor and Khabib will be face-to-face in just 1 week. Fabricio Werdum faces a 2-year suspension from USADA. And we have a stacked show today as we're joined by Colby Covington, the likely next challenger for the welterweight title, and UFC Fight Night Moscow competitors Mark Hunt, Andrei Arlovsky, and Therrion Ware. Thanks for those listening on TSN Radio in Toronto and Ottawa or to the podcast. Please tell your friends, review the show, and subscribe. Very, very eventful weekend at UFC 228, but let's start off with Conor and Khabib. These guys are going to be face-to-face next Thursday at Radio City Music Hall in New York, as the UFC hosts a press conference with both Conor and Khabib, as well as UFC President Dana White. And this is it. This is when the momentum starts. This is when the tidal waves of interest for this particular fight begin. Because I think that we, the collective we in the MMA community, are very excited to hear from Conor McGregor again and hear what's on his mind. Also going to be the first time that these two are in the same room since the incident at Barclays Center at UFC 223. And that alone is interesting, because that was a very, very personal thing. I mean, Conor went after Khabib, threw the dolly through the hand truck. Lately, we've heard some more news about that, as Conor McGregor is sued by Michael Chiesa, as well as some other folks getting sued as part of that lawsuit, including the Barclays Center security. But really, this particular fight cannot happen sooner. And it is happening very soon. It's really snuck up on us, actually. It's just in a few weeks' time. And the anticipation is going to start to build pretty much immediately from when these two square off face-to-face. Hopefully that's all it is, because these guys really want a piece of each other. I know Khabib has said that putting him in the same room as Conor would be a bad idea. And I guess we'll see if that's the case next Thursday. Will they square off? Who knows? It's a very volatile situation, but a very exciting one for fans and people that cover the sport, because this is really the fight we've been waiting for a long time. Really, Conor coming back is what I think most people have been eager to see. You know, if Conor was fighting Tony Ferguson, I think that would still be a huge fight. Conor was fighting Tyron Woodley for the welterweight title, also a huge fight. But this particular fight has layers to it, and I think that that's what makes it so interesting. And I keep thinking about how the outcome of this fight will play out, and every time I convince myself of one side, the other side sneaks in and says, well, what about this? I think that's what makes it really interesting. If Khabib didn't get hit so many times by Iaquinta, I think I'd really be siding towards Khabib, but he just showed how hittable he was, and if you get hit by one of those lefts from Conor, that's a problem. It's a big, big problem. But I can't wait for that fight. I'm sure a lot of people also cannot wait to see what happens at that particular event, because we've got a lot of animosity between the two of these folks. And I think that once fight week hits, it's going to be the biggest thing on the planet. I said that to Dana White last week when I interviewed him. I just get this feeling that once it's upon us, that's when the interest will be at such an all-time high, not just in this fight, but in the sport. I think a lot of people are going to be really embracing this fight. And I think it's going to breathe a fresh breath of air into the UFC. Apparently, UFC 228, the prelims, had the lowest rating they've had on FS1, which is not a good sign, but those prelims were great. Actually, I guess it was on FX, so maybe that's why. But it was this card, UFC 228, really over-delivered. It was one of those cards that did not look fantastic on paper. It especially got hit hard with the women's flyweight fight falling through. A lot of people confused as to why they stripped Nico Montaño of the belt, and really it's pretty cut and dry. If a champion gets on the scale and misses weight, they get stripped of the title. They still fight, but they get stripped of the title. Ask Brandon Halsey about that. That happened to him against Kendall Grove in Bellator. Ask Paulo Filho about that. It happened to him against Chael Sonnen in the WEC before the UFC took on that WEC middleweight division. So if Nico would have made it to the scale, unless she was 125 pounds or less, she would have gotten stripped anyways. So a lot of people think this sets a bad precedent. And people say, oh, well, why didn't they strip Nunes when she pulled out of the fight against Shevchenko? People are forgetting. She made weight. She got on the scale and made weight. Sinusitis was separate. It wasn't something that was part of her weight cutting. It wasn't a symptom of that. It was an illness. And people ask about Holloway. Oh, well, Holloway pulled out against Ortega. That's true. But it was medical. It wasn't, had nothing to do with the weight cut. It might have had to do with water loading or something, but it didn't have anything to do with the fact with, you know, that he was for sure going to be overweight. Whereas in this case, morning of the weigh-ins, you know, Nico does her open workout. She does media day. Morning of the weigh-ins, she's nowhere to be found. She's in the emergency ward. Seems like it was actually a pretty difficult situation, a pretty dire situation for her. As they said, according to her, they said that she would have gone into cardiac arrest if she would have waited 30 more minutes to go to the hospital. That's just scary. That is just scary because nobody wants to see that happen. Nobody wants to see weight cutting result in a loss of a life. And I think that that's just a scary, scary situation. But look, you know, going down this card from top to bottom, only four decisions. Everything else resulted in a finish. We had four submissions. We had three KOs, one and two TKOs. But really, the main event, I think, is the thing that was, you know, the most impressive, which was Tyron Woodley beating Darren Till in the fashion that he did. And I thought that that Tyron Woodley really had a masterful game plan going into this fight. He knew that Till was the type of guy that liked to feel out his opponents and react to what they're doing. So what did he do? He did everything. He did a little bit of everything. He did things that you've never seen Tyron Woodley do before. You really got to hand it to him. That was one heck of a game plan. And, you know, anytime you see a guy only get hit with, I think it might have been zero significant strikes officially at the end of the day. I mean, that's crazy. Almost two full rounds. And that's what happens. Just wild. Tyron Woodley sinks in that Darce choke, gets the finish. 4-19 in the second round. And it was sad seeing Darren Till, you know, after the fight because he was just so overcome with emotion. He said he was just crushed. Gutted is the word he used when I spoke to him. And, yeah, I mean, you can't help but feel for the kid. I mean, he's undefeated, 25 years old, all the confidence in the world. Didn't think that another man could beat him. And not only did he lose, but he lost in a lopsided fashion. So I don't know if it was the gravity of the situation fighting for the title, but quite clearly, Darren Till was not ready to be the UFC welterweight champion. And, you know, I wouldn't be shocked if he moves up to middleweight. I think that would be a good move for him. Not that the welterweight division has that many people in it. It doesn't have a lot of contenders right now. You got Covington, Usman. You know, RDA gets another win or two. Maybe he's in the mix. I think as long as Woodley's champion, we're not going to see Stephen Thompson get another shot. So Darren Till can wait. He can afford to go back into, you know, into 170, fight Usman or fight RDA and try to get back on the winning track. It's just a couple more wins away. He can be right back in the mix. And who knows, in a couple fights from now, if Tyron Woodley's even still in the UFC. He's an older guy. He's getting up there in age. How much longer does he want to be doing this for? He thinks he's the greatest welterweight of all time. If you don't think so, what else does he have to do? I'm not saying he is. I mean, I don't think he has the same resume as GSP has, but I don't know. Like, what more does Woodley have to do? Does he even have to knock out Kamaru Usman or Covington? It's tough because he's been the champion for a while now. Maybe not the length of time that GSP was the champion, but still for quite some time. We saw the co-main event, Jessica Andrade versus Karolina Kowalkiewicz. That was Rock'em Sock'em Robots, pretty much. And I know that term is used a lot, but they were just throwing at each other. The craziest part for me was Kowalkiewicz hit Andrade with something that looked really heavy, and Andrade just kept walking forward. That's at that point, you know, you're like, okay, well, I'm in trouble now. But I just hit her with a big shot, and it did not faze her in the least. One-punch knockout in the women's strawweight division is so rare. And I was backstage, and I mentioned this to Andrade afterwards. Tatiana Suarez just had an absolute virtuoso performance over Carla Esparza. Third-round TKO, less than 30 seconds left in the fight. But that doesn't tell the whole story because Suarez did not allow Esparza to have even a second of success in that fight. She smothered her. She out-wrestled her. And Esparza, I think, is the second-best wrestler in the strawweight division behind Suarez. Suarez just forced Esparza to quit. Esparza had nothing. So I'm backstage afterwards. You know, I'm about to interview Tatiana Suarez. She's in the hallway. And Andrade walks by her and gives her kind of a look. Like, you might have taken my title shot. Like, that was... She acknowledged, I think, the impressive nature of Suarez's win. But I think she gave her like a glancing look, and thought, I need to do something here to prevent this from happening, because this new up-and-comer, rising star, undefeated, might take my title shot. And she did just that. That knockout of Kovalkiewicz was absolutely brutal. And I think there's no question now that Andrade is the next suitor for the belt held by Rose Namajunas. And then, of course, you've got the women's flyweight division, and a lot of people are speculating that Joanna would fight Valentina Shevchenko. And I think that's a great fight, and I think it's especially a good fight for Joanna, because I think her path back to a title shot is very long, because as long as Rose is the champion, she's out of the mix. However, if Andrade ends up getting by Rose, I think Joanna's probably next in line, so maybe it is worth her sitting back and waiting and seeing what happens. Maybe get another win under her belt. Against who, I don't know. If you put her against Suarez, I think that's a bad move. Because I think if Suarez loses that fight, it's a bad look. And if Joanna gets completely smothered by Suarez, I think it would build Suarez up a lot. But then where do you go from here if you're Joanna? And I know Joanna doesn't want to fight for that much longer. So time will tell on that one. So many big finishes. Aljamain Sterling pulls off that crazy knee bar 3 minutes and 42 seconds into the second round. And then in the main card, Zabit Magomedsharipov does the exact same submission 3 minutes and 46 seconds into the second round. 4 second difference with almost the exact same finish. And when I saw Aljamain Sterling pull off that knee bar, I was like, wow, that's really cool. I've never seen that before. It's like a very modified knee bar. And then Zabit does the exact same thing like an hour and a half later. It's crazy. This sport is nuts. It really is. The things you see is... I mean, we saw Jim Miller and Diego Sanchez win back-to-back fights. Two of the oldest guys in the UFC. A lot of people had counted both of them out. Diego Sanchez with a dominant unanimous decision victory. His first one like that in a while. Jim Miller, 1 minute and 30 seconds into the first round. Rear naked choke. Crazy. Irene Aldana and Lucy Pudilova, fantastic fight. That was a really good fight. 29-28, 28-29, 29-28, split decision. Fight of the night. So much output. That was a lot of fun. So, that's where we stand with UFC 228. What happens from here is probably a title shot for Colby Covington. Whether it's at MSG or elsewhere, I don't know. But Colby was kind enough to join us on the show this week to discuss this outcome, as well as the mind of Colby Covington, which just has all kinds of interesting thoughts in it. That might be putting it lightly. And I will warn those listening to the podcast, there is some foul language here, so if that is something you're not comfortable with, feel free to fast forward to a future segment in the show. But he joins us now on the TSN MMA show.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's time to introduce this week's guest.
You know, it's very rare up here in Canada that we get an interview with Colby Covington. I know he doesn't love us syrup suckers, but he made an exception for me, so we appreciate having you on the show, Colby.
Hey, I appreciate it, man. You guys got good poutine, so I can't complain about the poutine over there.
I'm writing this down. Any compliment you give towards Canada, I'm going to keep, stored up in here.
Yeah, they're far and few in between, but hey, what can I say?
Last time we spoke, you said that the syrup sucked. Are you standing by that, though?
No, I was just saying that GSP is a syrup sucker. I didn't say the syrup sucks. I just said that GSP was a syrup sucker.
Okay, all right. Well, I do have the clip of you ripping our syrup, but I'll let it slide. I know that our importing situation and exporting situation might get tough, so we don't want to get any tariffs on stuff from America or our syrup.
Hey, you know how I do, man. It's nothing personal to anybody, but I don't have feelings, and I don't care about anybody else's feelings.
I think we get that sense. We get that sense. I mean, we saw on the weekend how you responded to Tyron Woodley. I showed him the tweet, and he said basically, I'll fight whoever the UFC wants me to fight. He didn't seem to take it too personally, but he would like the headline at MSG, and I know that's on your mind as well. Is that what you're targeting?
Yeah, absolutely. That's the only fight to make. It just sucks, you know. Tyron could have – I built this fight, you know, made this fight huge the last year and a half, and then you got Tyron over here who just won – and fought so hard to become the number one contender, and he's worried about plugging his album. I mean, it's a complete joke. You know, where's his album going to debut on the charts? Probably at worst album of all time. You know, he finally gets his money fight with me, and he doesn't even cut a promo. He says, "Oh, I'll fight whoever the UFC fights." Like, come on, man, he could have made this fight 10 times bigger. Dana's right. He constantly shoots himself in the foot, and he's wondering why he's not a star. But it's okay, though. I built this thing all by my damn self. I'll carry him to the Garden, and I'll bury him at half court looking like Clyde Frazier.
I feel like at this point, though, if Till would have won, you still would have been able to have enough ammunition to get that thing going. I feel like you've kind of built that skill over time.
Yeah, it's an acquired skill that I have, but, you know, I didn't have as much as much data with Till as I do with Woodley. You know, me and Woodley, we go way back at American Top Team since the first day I got here 7 or 8 years ago. And then, you know, we trained 4 or 5 years ago. He brought me in for a training camp. He brought me out to St. Louis. So we genuinely hate each other. There's a lot more real beef there. Nothing's manufactured. We really want to kill each other. We he's going to leave the octagon in a stretcher. I'm going to be leaving the octagon with 10 pounds of gold around my waist on my private jet back to Miami.
I did notice that you called him Tyrone, though, this Saturday, not Ty Quill. Is that because he got an early finish?
Tyrone is still not his name, though. You know, he likes to be called Tyron. He gets so fucking mad when people call him Tyrone. So, you know, it's just trolling, you know, just making him mad. I know that pisses him off. Last time someone called him Tyrone at Fox Sports, he freaked the fuck out on the middle of the set. It's not Tyrone. It's Tyron. Don't you ever call me Tyrone. So, you know, I know that pisses him off. So that's what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to piss him off. I want him to get so mad that he wants to fight because he's been ducking me for long enough now.
I feel like Dana called him Tyrone for a long period of time before he started switching it to Tyron.
Yeah, he did. But I think Dana didn't genuinely know that it wasn't Tyron. I think Dana thought it was Tyrone. So, you know, it's like with me, you know, my name's Colby, but some people call me Kobe, you know. It's just sometimes you forget a letter.
Dude, does that annoy you, though? If he starts calling you Kobe in different tweets, that's probably not going to bother you, I imagine.
To be honest, Aaron, there's literally nothing anybody can say that's going to bother me, and nothing gets under my skin. I have very thick skin, and in this business, the fighting business, if you don't have thick skin, you shouldn't be in this business.
You know what's interesting? You know, one of the big stories with Till was how far along he'd come in a year. It was a year from this past Friday where it was announced that he was in the main event against Cowboy Cerrone, but you can pretty much say the same for you. I mean, a year ago you had just beaten Dong Young Kim. It was a big win for you, and that's when you really started to open up in terms of your trash talk and all of that. There's an interview that you did before you fought Brian Barberino where, you know, you were very calm and collected. What set you off? It feels like a switch kind of went off, and that's when you decided to make this more about, I guess, the histrionics and the promo cutting and build yourself up in that regard.
Yeah, I knew after the Barberina fight, I kind of looked back on some of the interviews and just everything, you know, about my image, my character, you know, what I'm trying to portray. And I just didn't like what I saw. You know, I wasn't getting the respect I deserved, you know. And the biggest thing at that time, I was looking for big fights. I wanted the big fights since the day I got in the UFC. I was looking for the top 10 fights, the top 5 fights, the biggest fights right away. Those are the fights I wanted because I knew my skill level. I knew I was the best fighter in the world. So I wanted to prove it against the best fighters in the world. And at that time, no one would fight me. I was begging to fight all the ring guys, but literally no one would fight him because they knew that they couldn't beat me. They knew I was that tough of a fighter that they didn't want that fight. So I knew I had to step my game up. I had to become, you know, whatever. Some of these guys are buying followers. I know I had to start getting followers. Whether they hated me or loved me, it's all the same thing. You know, it's all people tuning in to watch you fight. So, you know, I knew I had to step my game up. And whether it had people hating me or not, I had to step that up and get people to hate me so I could start getting those big fights.
Have you always been a proud Republican? You're from California, you know, typically a blue state. Oregon's mostly a blue state, you know, for the most part. Have you always been a very pro-Republican guy, or are you just somebody who sides with the president regardless of who it is?
No, I've always been a pro-Republican, you know, pro-troops, pro-military, pro-gun, you know, and you know, I love everything that the Republican side does. And it just so happens, you know, now that Trump's in office, I love everything, his philosophies and just the way he carries himself. I mean, you can't take away how much he loves this country and, you know, how hard he's working for it.
You brought the belt to the White House. It really hasn't been done before. That's kind of a, you know, people will make, I guess, diminish the value of that because a lot of people are pretty anti-Trump. But having a UFC champion go to the White House and meet with the president is kind of, you know, uncharted territory.
Absolutely. That's history. No fighters ever went to, you know, a sitting president in the Oval Office and gave their belt to the president. So, you know, no matter what people want to say about me, they can never take away that history. I did that, and they can't take away that moment. So, you know, I don't see Tyrone Woodley. I didn't see him going to Obama, getting invited by Obama when he was in office. So, you know, everybody can talk smack, say whatever they want to say, but, you know, I don't see them getting invited by their president to the Oval Office.
So you go there with Dana White. Dana had said prior to the visit to the White House that you were going to be stripped of the interim title as soon as the first punch was thrown in that Woodley and Till bout. Did you have any sort of conversation with him while you were there in that regard, or was it just, you know, White House business?
It was a small conversation. It was more White House business. You know, we're there focused on enjoying the moment and just being happy to be there. You know, I'm a very proud American, you know. No doubt about it that I love my country. And to be, you know, at a place like the White House and just sitting there around all these senators, you know, I was around this guy, Lindsey Graham, and he's negotiating these big tax bills, getting ready to go in there to Trump's office. And he's only in there for 2 minutes. And then here I am, the UFC champion, sitting outside the White House, getting ready to walk in the Oval Office after all these senators. And it's just, it was such a surreal feeling, you know, just being so proud to be what I am. You know, I mean, American, we're so free here. We get so much opportunity here, and it all comes from the high ups. It all starts at the White House. So, you know, it was a crazy feeling to be there. It was more business and being happy in the moment. But, you know, we talked a little bit. You know, I talked to Dana a little bit. I said, hey, man, I had a legit surgery, man. I had, you can still hear it in my voice. Listen to me, dude. This is not no joke. I want to be at 100% when I fight Tyrone Woodley. I'm not going to fight him at 70% because I want to be at my best to show my potential. So, you know, I had to get the nose surgery, a nasal surgery. And he's like, you know, it's just bad timing. I'm like, dude, even today, we're in September. That's 3 months, 3.5 months since I won my world title. Like, how? You can't strip me 3.5 months. That's not fair. That's not adequate time. Let's think about Tyrone Woodley. He just took off 13 months. He didn't fight one fight in 13 months. You know how many fights I fought in 13 months? I fought three fights and three of the best contenders, Dung Hum Kim, Damian Maya, and Rafael Dos Anjos. Three of the toughest welterweights of all time. I mean, just three killers in a row. So, you know, it wasn't fair, you know, but, you know, he's like, you know, it's unfortunate. It's timing. We had to book this pay-per-view. We didn't have a main event, so. You know, it was a small conversation with Dan at the White House, but I was just more happy to be there in the presence of Donald Trump.
But from what I understand, you mentioned to Ariel earlier this week, nobody's called you and said that you have been stripped of the title.
Yeah, I haven't been stripped of the title. I don't know where everybody's getting this notion from. You know, possession is 9/10 of the law, so, you know, that belt's mine. They can't take that belt from me. You know, that belt's not going anywhere. I earned that belt. No one's beating me for that belt, so. You know, I haven't heard anything about being stripped. As far as I'm concerned, I'm still the UFC welterweight world champion.
And I imagine that once this fight with Woodley's made, you're going to be bringing that belt everywhere for all these, any press you're going to be doing with him, because, you know, you do consider yourself the champion.
Absolutely, you can't take that moment away in history, man. I beat the second best welterweight in the division. Rafael Dos Anjos would have smoked Tyrone Woodley, and he knows it. That's why Woodley didn't come out to fight him, because. You know, RDA's got such good cardio, and that's Woodley's kryptonite. He knows he can't beat guys that have very good cardio that are going to put pressure on him. So, you know, guys like me and RDA are nightmare matchups for Woodley, and he knows that. So, you know, that this is the world title, and that will be going with me everywhere. It's going to sit next to me in all our interviews, all our lead-up. You know, that's my belt. No one's beat me for that belt.
One guy that kind of tried to undercut the situation was Kamaru Usman. He weighed in. I know Woodley said he wasn't going to fight him even if Till didn't make weight or Till had to pull out or anything along those lines. Afterwards, I spoke to Usman. He said he thought it was unfair that you were getting the next shot because he was there and made the weight and was prepared.
That broke bitch, Marty, ain't even in the title picture, Aaron. Let's be honest, man. Saturday night was the closest he's ever getting to a title fight, and that's front row like the mark he is. Honestly, that bitch is my biggest fan. He talks a lot of shit, but he ain't going to do shit but keep watching my greatness from the sidelines.
Nico Montano, she pulls out of the fight due to, I guess, an issue with weight cutting. When you saw that, what were your thoughts?
You know, I had mixed feelings on that one because, you know, I know they were trying to line her up for like a year to get a fight, and then she didn't want to take fights or whatnot is what I heard behind the scenes. And then she pulls out of the weight thing. It's just, you know, it was a little unprofessional. You know, you should be, when you're fighting a world title fight, your whole camp, you should be centered around, you know, your weight cut and making sure everything goes a plan accordingly. So, you know, it was tough. You know, you don't want to see someone get stripped unless they're losing a fight, but she couldn't even get to the fight. So, you know, it's an unfortunate situation, but, you know, business keeps moving. You know, it doesn't stop for anybody.
I think the thing that people aren't really taking into account is if she got on the scale and missed weight, she would have been stripped anyways.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's I guess how it works. Is if you're the champion and you miss weight, the belt becomes vacated. That's how it works in boxing. You know, Chael fought Paulo Filho back in WEC, and Filho missed the weight. That ended up being a 3-round fight, and Filho sent Chael the belt in the mail afterwards because he felt bad that Chael had made weight and he didn't.
Oh, wow, that's funny. What a crazy bit of history. My boy Chael P. Sonnen, man. Oregon gangster, just like myself, man. One of the greatest living Americans, man.
He's from the mean streets of West Lynn. You're from the mean streets of Springfield. Which city is, I guess, a little rougher around the edges?
Oh, dude. Springfield for sure is way rougher around the edges. I mean, there's a lot of stuff that goes on in West Lynn. Don't get me wrong. That's a crazy city. I don't recommend walking there at night unless you're loaded with a gun. But Springfield, that's no joke, man. People get eaten up alive at nighttime there.
Yeah, I can imagine. I know Oregon is a tough place. It's very rough. Lots of trees. And if those trees come to life, everybody's in big trouble.
It's real tough, man. People don't realize the mountains out there, man, the trees, the nature, man, that's it. That'll kill you out there, man. You got to be careful out there, man. There's a lot of wilderness that you got to be careful where you're walking at night.
Well, with Woodley, you watch him fight Till. Very impressive win, you know, at least from an optics perspective. You got Till landing zero significant strikes. Were you at least impressed with Tyron's performance?
To be honest, no. You know, if anything, you know, I got to take credit for Woodley's performance. I'm glad he didn't lose. I wanted him to win. I worked too hard to build this fight for anyone else to steal my glory for ending his career. But, you know, as far as his fight, you know, Till was an overrated doughboy. He had a whole lot of hype. He talked the talk, but he couldn't walk the walk like me. He beat a crippled old clown boy, and he got a gift in his hometown against a choir boy. He should have never been rewarded for missing weight in a third of his fights in the UFC. Good thing he neglected his family so he could land zero significant strikes. What a joke.
GSP, do you think he's the greatest welterweight of all time?
On paper, yeah, but if we're talking about real greatest of all time to the people and the fans, there's no doubt about it. It's me, and I'm going to go down as the greatest welterweight of all time. It's a different era. You know, it's a lot higher level. Back then, you know, GSP was fighting cans, man. He was fighting guys that were coming out of the stands that fought for, that had 1 week of training experience. You know, it's just different levels. You know, now is a different timing, and you know, I do a lot more that GSP can't do. You know, I sell fights, I promote, you know, I get people excited about fights again. So, and I'm beating the best guys in the world consistently every single fight. So, you know, when it's all said and done, I will be going down as the greatest welterweight of all time.
You do say a lot of controversial things. Have you ever been threatened by anybody where you thought this could actually be a legitimate threat, where you did feel like you might be endangered? Not by a fighter, obviously, but by somebody, you know, in the public, somebody saying something crazy to you.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. The you know, after the Brazil thing, I'm still nervous about that. I was getting death threats from all the favelas and all the gangs out there in Brazil. Like, they, you know, I was getting thousands of DMs and messages on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook saying, these people from Brazil, we will kill you. I guarantee you're not going to live for another year. We're coming to find you, and we will kill you. So, you know, after I said my remarks to Brazil, you know, I know they took that personal. So, you know, it wasn't anything personal. You know, I'm doing business and I'm selling fights. So, you know, I was a little nervous about the Brazil thing. That's why they had to move the fight. You know, the interim title fight that I had with RDA was originally going to be in Rio de Janeiro. But the favelas were hitting up the UFC saying, hey, we got a $50,000 bounty on Colby's head that he doesn't make it to the octagon alive. So, you know, all those favelas put a $50,000 bounty on my head to kill me that I don't make it to the octagon. So the UFC is like, nope, we're going to put this title fight in the U.S. on U.S. soil. So that's why I got moved to Chicago.
I never know when you're embellishing or not. But is that's for real? Like there was a legitimate bounty on you?
No, I swear that's 100% for real. There was a legitimate bounty on my head. That's why the fight got moved. Once the UFC saw that, their legal department, they're like, nope, we cannot do that. We can't take a chance of putting fighter safety and putting this guy's life in danger at work.
That's crazy. When you saw those threats come through, were you like, maybe I should tone this down a little bit? Or were you like, maybe I just shouldn't go to Brazil?
No, to be honest, I was like, you know what? Screw it, man. I got no fear. You know, I was willing to give my – that's what shows what extent I'm willing to go to make it in this career and become a superstar. That's what I'm willing to go to, man. I'm willing to put my life on the line. I was willing to go fight in Brazil, even though that they had a $50,000 bounty on my head. I didn't care, man. I was like, okay, man, I'm willing to take that chance because I want to be a superstar. And sometimes if you want to be a superstar, you're going to have to put your life on the line.
That's crazy. Wow, that must have been actually, you know, quite scary. You just never know. You never know what's going to happen outside the walls of, you know, your home or wherever you're going.
Yeah, it's true. That's why, you know, I always keep an eye on my back. You know, I'm never, like, you know, not aware of my surroundings. Anytime I go anywhere now, I'm very aware of my surroundings. You know, there's a lot of, it's not just Brazilians, a lot of people that, you know, now I got, you know, all the liberal snowflakes. I got all the left-wing motherfuckers that want to come after me. So, you know, I got to watch my back and always, you know, but now I stay inside. You know, I'm a homebody. You know, I don't go out. I don't do stuff. I don't party. I don't go to clubs. You know, I be smart with my life now. I don't put myself in danger.
Will you have added security whenever you're going to any of these events?
Oh, absolutely. Anytime I'm at an event now, I will have added security. I'll have security guards that are loaded with pistols and stuff. So, you know, luckily my agent, Dan Lambert, he has all the money in the world. So he's a billionaire. So, you know, he'll provide security detail for me anytime I go to events. And, you know, I won't have to worry about, you know, fans or anybody trying to come at me. I can just focus on my fights.
And I guess you kind of caught the ire of Snoop Dogg, although I don't think he knew that you weren't Darren Till. But he was, he is a former UFC broadcaster. I don't know how he didn't know the difference.
Yeah, I know. That asshole needs to stick to rapping. And he also needs to get used to Donald Trump being his president for another 6 years. So Snoop Dogg's a joke. Have you seen that malnourished twig hit the mitts?
I haven't. Is it, I'm guessing it's not very good?
No, Aaron, it's terrible. It looks like a toddler hit in the mitts. It looks like a guy that doesn't have an athletic bone in his body. But yet here he is trying to critique fighters and make fun of fighters when he can't even hit mitts as good as a kindergartner.
It does seem like a lot of fighters have that in common with you in terms of not liking Snoop Dogg. Because of, I guess,
yeah,
on the Contender Series, he wasn't, you know, super respectful to these guys who are putting their lives on the line.
Yeah, he's a clown, you know. He has no business talking about fighting and giving an opinion on fighting because he's never fought and he can't fight.
So is MSG the target for you in terms of where you want to fight next? Like if you had your pick, that's where you're looking to headline an event?
Absolutely. That's the mecca, man. MSG is, you know, the most iconic sports arena in the world. And, you know, it's right down the street from the Trump's office, you know, that – I know the Trump family has already reached out to me. Hey, if you fight in New York, we'd love to come support you. So keep us posted. So, you know, I'd be right down the street from the Trumps. It would be a huge event. You know, it's already, you know, every time they go to Madison Square Garden, you know, it's the marquee event, you know, so it's a blockbuster event. Why not do this fight? It's the biggest fight the UFC has right now. So to make, you know, they got the Conor Khabib fight. This is the biggest fight to make. There's no other bigger fight out there right now. So it makes sense to go there, but, you know, I'll leave that to them, man. I can only ask for what I want. You know, if I don't get it, you know, it is what it is. I'm hoping maybe Super Bowl weekend. You know, that's another really big weekend that I'd like to do it. So, you know, we'll see how the cards lie. But, you know, I'm prepared and I'm training hard now. And whenever the UFC needs me, I'll be available.
Do you want to fight Super Bowl weekend so you can take eyeballs off of the NFL?
Exactly. That's exactly it, man. See, you read my mind, man. I didn't think we were on that good of chemistry yet, but you read my mind, man. All these fucking NFL fucking jabronis, man, kneeling during games to the national anthem, trying to take a political stance when they're overpaid as it is. You know, it's a complete joke. You know, I got no respect for anybody in the NFL anymore, especially the guys that are kneeling. And that's my whole mission for the rest of my career is to take eyes off the NFL and draw more eyes to the UFC.
I'm guessing you have probably a good core of fans that do follow you and do like, I guess, your political stances. I mean, you rip on those guys for making political stances, but a lot of what you've been doing lately is, you know, our political stances.
Yeah, but no, it's completely different, though. You got to, let's be honest, these guys are paid to play football. I'm paid to promote and sell fights. It's a you can't compare us. It's a completely different stance. I mean, you're talking about guys that are trying to take a political stance, kneeling for the national anthem on our flag. Like, let's talk about what that means. Since we grew up as little kids, putting, you know, our arm across our heart to the national anthem, it was to pay respect to the troops, to pay respect to America. This is something bigger than politics, man. This is about doing what's right for the troops. You know, the military, like, the flag to the military, that means everything. So, like, anytime the flag is shown, like, our military's out there, they're sacrificing their lives, they're putting their lives on, like, to protect these silver spoon-fed football players, to protect their careers. They're putting their lives on the line so these football players can have their opportunities, and it's a complete joke, you know. They have their limited time. They're on TV to play football, dude. We're on TV to sell fights and talk shit, so it's completely different careers and a completely different selling point. So, you know, these guys should not be disrespecting our military like that, because I know firsthand, you know, I go visit the troops, you know, I give back my time to go hang out with our army and all the military service. So, you know, I know how much the flag means to those guys, and the football players kneel to it. They take that to heart. It disrespects them, and I just feel bad. It really tears my heart apart to see, you know, these guys kneel to our flag.
Do you feel like the anthem should be played at UFC events, or do you think that, you know, I guess anthems and politics and all that should be separated from sports as a whole?
You know, I think it should be, but, you know, you also have a diverse culture. You know, there's a lot of different countries and nations coming there, so I would understand if they didn't want to, because it's not just USA people. There's people from Brazil, there's people from Canada, there's people from Europe, so I would understand, you know, then it's favoritism, then you'd have... But it'd be kind of cool if you had to play your national anthem every country you went to, you know, all the different countries for fights, if they played it. But yeah, I 100%. In America, like, for a sporting event, like, they should play the national anthem, because what does that stand for, man? That stands for being proud to be in America. It stands for the troops and the military. So, you know, we have to pay our respects to them, because without them, we wouldn't be here doing what we're doing.
You were on Ariel Helwani's show this Monday, as was CM Punk, and CM Punk had some things to say about you. I don't know if he directly said you were racist, but he said anybody who kind of associates with Donald Trump is racist. We do know where he trains at Ruva Sport with Tyron Woodley, but what did you think of his comments, and is he really qualified to be commenting on UFC fighters?
Yeah, he's not qualified to be commenting on UFC fighters. Let's be honest, you can't even win amateur fights. You're a complete joke. You're a complete fake and fraud. Let's be honest. Your whole WWE career was based off a guy, Kenta. You stole all your moves from Kenta. So the guy's a fake and a fraud as it is. And he just has no room to be talking to MMA. But all he's doing right now by talking about me and calling me a racist, he's just clout chasing. He's looking for attention in the MMA world because he knows that I am the center of attention in the MMA world right now. I have the most heat right now. And so he's just trying to draw a little bit of his heat, but, you know, he needs to sit his ass down because he's a little junior.
You shared a card with him in Chicago. Did you talk to him at all, meet him, anything like that?
Nah, he was in my locker room, and they, like, gave him special privileges, man. They put him in, like, like his own little room so he could work out. Like, it was a complete joke. Watching that guy hit the pads, I'm telling you, Aaron, like, I'd let my little sister, who's like 7 years old, hit the pads and have more confidence that she would win a fight over a guy like CM Punk. The guy's a complete joke. He shouldn't even be fighting.
All right, Colby. Well, you're always fun to talk to, always interesting. You do have this fight coming up with Woodley sometime in the future. I know Dana has said that you are the number one contender, the rightful number one contender. And really, when you look down the welterweight division, aside from Usman, who's on a bit of a streak, there aren't really a lot of contenders right now as a whole. Is there anybody in the division that you think, obviously not to get a title shot over you, but is in the mix for a title shot after your fight with Woodley? Who do you consider the top guys in the division?
It's definitely the toughest division in the UFC. It's the deepest. You know, it's always been. You know, most of the people in the world walk around 170 pounds. So, you know, it's the deepest, toughest in the division. But it's just no one's really carved themselves out and put themselves you know, in that title picture. You know, Kamaru Usman, you know, he's a scam, bro. He's never beat anybody. You know, he beat Damian Maia after I left Damian Maia in a pool of blood, and I gave Damian Maia the worst beating of his career. And I also did that in three rounds. I beat up Damian Maia worse in three rounds than Woodley and Usman beat up Damian Maia in 10 rounds. They both fought him in five-round fights, and they couldn't put as much damage on him, as much damage as I put on him in three rounds. So, you know, he hasn't carved himself out. He needs to win one more good fight. He doesn't get a title shot off of one fight and a bunch of no-names. So, you know, he needs to fight a RDA, a Stephen Thompson, a Robbie Lawler, someone like that, if he wants to get a title shot. So, you know, besides that, you know, I just don't see anybody in the division. The division's getting older. You know, Thompson, he's not there anymore. He's getting old. He's gotten his two shots. He needs to hang it up soon. Lawler, he's the most hit fighter in UFC history. He should hang it up soon. I mean, I would say RDA is next, you know, if anything. So, you know, RDA is a former champion, you know, very good record. So besides that, there's just the depth's not there. So after I destroy Tyrone Woodley, it's got to be GSP or the winner of Conor McGregor versus Khabib.
That's who you have your eyes on next? Is a super fight with one of those guys?
Absolutely. You know, Conor said he wants to make history. He wants to come up, go for his third belt at a third weight class. So here I am, motherfucker. Come get it, you Irish little leprechaun, fucking cokehead. And then you know, we all know that Khabib's had his problems with tiramisu. He loves to eat. He loves to get fat like a little pig. And he missed weight all the time at lightweight. So, you know, it only makes sense that he comes up to welterweight. And then as far as GSP, you know, it's like, what's his deal? You know, I know he wants one more fight. He wants that one more money fight to solidify his career. But, you know, he's not going to get a lightweight. He needs to stop fucking doing that lightweight bullshit. He just fought a middleweight. He's a former welterweight. He needs to come back and fight a welterweight if he wants to fight at all. And what a better way than King Chaos to end GSP's career than Canada can rejoice. And I'll come to Canada and make Canada great again.
Well, we do have the pay-per-view in December. That might end up happening anyways, right? You and Woodley in Toronto.
I mean, dude, I don't want to do Toronto, if I'm being honest, man. They got so high taxes, man. You think I want to pay all my money to taxes? It's like 30 or 35% tax rate over there. So, you know, if the UFC wants me to do it, I mean, but it just doesn't make sense to go do me and Tyrone in Canada, if I'm being honest. You know, I got no ill will towards Canada. I love the Canadian women. I actually had a Canadian girlfriend a while back. So, you know, I got no ill will towards Canada, but we need to do this in America. We're both Americans. I'm proud to be an American. You know, I just went to the White House. You know, I'm representing America. I'm putting America on my back now, all the troops, you know, President Trump. And this needs to be in America. It either needs to be at the Garden, at Madison Square Garden, or it needs to be in Vegas, or, you know, Super Bowl weekend, wherever it needs to be. But this is an American affair now, and I'm gonna bury Tyrone Woodley on American soil.
All right. Well, you're not the first person to complain about the taxes, so no offense taken there. Especially, you know, with a lot of these guys coming over. I forget who it was. Somebody recently said, I don't want to fight in Canada. Or it was Junior Dos Santos, I think, he said he didn't want to fight in Canada or Australia. And I think he's fighting in Australia anyways, so whatever. But thanks for your time, Colby. It's always a pleasure speaking with you. And hope to catch up with you again soon.
All right. Thanks a lot, Aaron. I'll catch up with you soon, man.
That was Colby Covington. That guy makes me chuckle. You know, people are going to say, how do you give that guy a platform? Why do you give this guy airtime? Did you not hear him say that the wilderness in Oregon is dangerous? Anybody? Nobody picked up on that? I think what Colby's doing is kind of brilliant. I mentioned this on the show with the Wrestling Observer show with Josh Nason that I was on this week. I said, you know, he's such a typical heel. Like, he tries so hard to be a heel that it makes people angrier because they can tell that he's trying to be a heel. But I never know with him. I never know when he's embellishing or not. That's why I had to kind of check his answer about the favelas putting a bounty on him. But he swears that that's true. That's pretty crazy. That is pretty crazy. But Colby Covington, I think, will be facing Tyron Woodley sometime sooner rather than later. He says no disrespect to Canada, but he's hoping it's not in Toronto because of the taxes. And hey, you know, that's fair. That's fair. People do get taxed heavily to fight here. It's a shame. Maybe just pay them more. Pay their taxes for them. I don't know. I hope the card in Toronto's stacked. We'll see what happens. I spoke to Dana White last week. He mentioned that they are trying to make Max Holloway versus Brian Ortega the main event for UFC 231 in Toronto at the Scotiabank Arena December 8th. So if that's what if that's a main event that floats your boat, and I think it's going to be a fantastic fight, then you'll be happy about that. But if you were hoping that you'd have some sort of Georges St. Pierre main event, I don't know why people continue to hold out hope for that, but likely not the case. Some big news came out yesterday. Fabricio Werdum faces a 2-year suspension from USADA after a positive test. And, you know, I spoke to Werdum back in January, and he said, "Mark my words, by the end of this year, I'll be a champion." Instead, loses to Volkov, gets popped by USADA, and now has to sit out until he's around 44 years old. That's rough. That's rough. I guess we'll find out what, you know, if that's going to stick, but from what I remember reading, Werdum said that he said, you know, he doesn't understand how he tested positive. So we'll see what happens from there. And my big question here is, why does it take such little time to announce Verdum's suspension, but we still don't have an answer on John Jones? John Jones tested positive last July. That's over a year ago. That's all over a year and a month ago. It's like 13, 14 months ago. And we still have no answer as to what's going on with him, what his status is. I want answers. Is he going to be fighting at MSG, UFC 230? A lot of people have been saying that they're hearing that. But I'll believe it when I see it. I just don't know how they could possibly give this guy a 1 or 1.5 year suspension as a multiple-time offender. Now you've got Werdum doing 2 years. And when he was in front of the California Commission, they said it was in his system, and he said he has no idea how it got there. And it really doesn't make a lot of sense that he would take such a substance during a period of time where he knows he's going to be tested more. But who knows? Who knows with John Jones? I'd like to see him back in the octagon. Hopefully he's clean, and hopefully we do get to see him compete because he's such a joy to watch. But at the same time, if we want to really be committed to clean sport, we need to call this for what it is. And if he only gets a year and a half suspension, it's very odd, considering the precedents that have been put forward earlier, given past suspensions of other fighters. A person that's perfect to talk to about Fabricio Werdum's suspension, someone who has fought him in the past and is probably the most outspoken critic of doping in MMA, and even the USADA process, he feels it should be even more strong, is Mark Hunt. And he's headlining UFC Moscow this weekend against Alexei Oleinik. Oleinik's a tough guy. He's really good, especially on the ground, but I don't know if he's going to be able to get Mark Hunt there, you know, short of maybe pulling guard. But on the feet, I don't know. I don't think Oleinik has much for Mark Hunt. That's going to be a tough fight for Alexei Oleinik. You know, Oleinik, I think, matches up well against most of the heavyweight division. I just think this is one of those cases where he doesn't match up well at all. And once again, I must stress, there is some foul language in this interview, so listener discretion is advised. But without further ado, here's the headliner of UFC Moscow, Mark Hunt. He joins us now on the TSN MMA show. I'm joined now by one of the most exciting heavyweights in MMA history, a man who's been around the sport for quite some time, headlining yet another event. It's Mark Hunt. He's headlining UFC Moscow against Alexei Oleinik. How are you today, Mark?
I'm good, thanks. Thanks for having me on the show.
Of course, my pleasure. So, Alexei Oleinik, this is a guy who's done a lot of crazy stuff on the ground. He's a fantastic grappler with a big bag of tricks, but you're not a guy who gets down to the ground very likely. So, is the game plan here just to stand?
Of course, I think it's my game, and taking multiple tries and put me to the ground, so yeah.
Australia and New Zealand, this region of the world right now, you've got Robert Whittaker, Israel Adesanya, Tai Tuivasa, Tyson Pedro Volkanovski, Megan Anderson, just to name a few. Do you feel like a lot of the success from this region is because these folks have followed in your footsteps in this sport, and you've been kind of a pioneer in the region?
You know, you've got the champ, Robert Whittaker, already got the young guns coming through. I think it's great news for our side of the world because, you know, you need the Australians and New Zealanders, everyone from out from the Oceania, need someone to follow. So, it's, you know, my time's really done, and the new people coming through, the new age, so yeah.
After this particular fight, you have one fight left on your contract. Now, Dana White says something fairly interesting. He says that you're a little bit nutty, but that he'd like to renew with you if you keep winning fights. Is that something that you're open to, or after these next two fights, are you hoping to fight elsewhere?
Well, Well, look, I mean, everyone's a bit nutty. Who, which fighter isn't fucking nutty? Who the fuck, gets punched in the face for a living? I mean, sure, of course we're nutty. It is what it is with the Thompson. Like I said, the only issue I have is to make it even playing field. I congratulate Jeff Brzezinski on catching him. It's come back cheap. Little bum motherfucking get it back to the fucking favelas. Enjoy your time in the toilet, bro. Anyway, it's good if anything comes about, a new contract, we'll see if it's good enough. I want to enjoy the rest of my career. I've got 2 fights left, and then if no offer is up, then I'm just going to fight 3 more times globally and retire.
A recent opponent of yours from a couple of years back, Fabricio Verdum, recently got a 2-year suspension. Do you feel like most of the guys that you fought in the UFC haven't been clean?
Majority of them have been clean. I can't really put the finger at all the guys that have been honest and about their craft in any way. But, good job on Usada. Good job on Jeff Savitsky for catching this little bum bag and little scummy dog and pushing him for 2 years. I just feel they're just weak-minded people that do that, especially in this sport. Good job they caught him. See you later to your career, buddy.
Yeah, he'll be 43, almost 43 when he's eligible to fight again. So it could be the very end for Fabricio Verdum, former champion in the sport.
No, at the end of the day, it's one. The first time they get caught, it should be a 5-year ban, and the next time they get caught, it should be life ban. We're not playing around here with we're playing around here with people's lives. You know what I mean? They're not like the rest of us that get up and honestly do the hard work and stuff. Like I said before, good job to Usada and good job to Jeff Savitsky for catching these films.
What do you think of these situations like in the case of Junior Dos Santos? He tests positive. They find that there's really no wrongdoing, but he gets suspended anyways. Do you think that should be changed?
So, no wrongdoing, what does that mean by no wrongdoing? Junior, when I fought him, he doesn't look like the same person when I fought him. He looks different now. If you look at all these fighters, the before and after Usada, they just weak minded. But if they haven't been caught, if they haven't done anything wrong, well then of course they shouldn't be pinged for it. But you can't really call dick pills, blame dick pills or any other bullshit like that to make up, horse meat and any other rubbish like excuses that they make up. If you got nothing to worry about, then why you shouldn't have to worry about excuses.
And one person you've been very outspoken about, obviously, is your opponent at UFC 200, Brock Lesnar, who's now getting a title shot. You've had more recent wins than he has. He hasn't had an official win in 8 years. What do you think that says about the sport right now? I know a lot of people are pretty upset about the fact that he's getting a title shot against Daniel Cormier.
Well, first off, Daniel Cormier should have told him to fuck up, piss off. If I was a double champ, I'd be caught in my own shot. Why would you want to fight a guy that you stand against? The guy's a fucking... He's a fucking little dick cheater. He's a fucking steroid user. Why would you want to let some bum like that? He's not even ranked, so why would you even hit rankings for? Let's just put everyone that people know and put him at the front row. It's just stupid. That guy shouldn't get any credit. He's just a weak-minded little bum. That's all these guys are. They're just weak-minded. They shouldn't be hanging out with the big boys in the top end because, all the big guys up here, we train hard. We use our minds for everything. It's not easy to get up to the top here. That little big motherfucker should be kicked out of the fucking universe. He's a cheater. They're all cheaters.
It is very weird. Cormier hasn't defended the title yet. There are a lot of guys. It's not like the heavyweight division.
Why would Cormier allow that? When you're the champ, especially the double champ, you call the shots on look at Conor McGregor. Ain't no one tell him what to do. He's the champ. So why would Cormier fight... a fucking cheater like fucking Brock Lesnar. You should just say, I'll give it a pass. He's not worth my time. He's a grub.
I don't know if you saw this on Reddit. Kazushi Sakuraba did a Q&A. And for the following questions, who's the greatest fighter of all time? Who's your favorite fighter to watch? Who would he want to see in Quintet, which is his grappling organization, and who will win between Khabib and McGregor? He answered Mark Hunt for all of those. What does that mean to you?
What that means, it's the truth. No, I don't know. It's just, I think they understand what this is all about.
He wants you to join his grappling organization, Quintet. Would you consider that?
Me joining a grappling? Oh, man, I'll join anything if you're not fucking cheating. I mean, shit. Wouldn't you?
So you think that the answer is a 5-fight suspension or 5-year suspension and then lifetime suspension? That should be the penalties?
This is the answer. First, you take off all their fucking money. Whatever they are supposed to make, take it off them. And I give it to the guy that doesn't cheat, or take it off and just then give them a fucking shame. That's to start with. First offensive is if they're caught for fucking proper steroids, then 5 years. Next, if they're caught again, if they come back after 5 years, if they're caught again, then life back. Why would you want to fucking argue with those fellas? I mean, why would you want to waste your time with them? I'm sick of talking about this. I think, I don't want to talk, why am I always talking about steroids?
Well, I was going to ask you next was, of the Australian and New Zealand fighters, who do you think is going to be the champion next? I know Whitaker's currently a champ, but from what you've seen, who do you think has the best shot of being a champion?
We've got one champ. Whitaker's a champ. We've got Tatu Vata, he's going to be champ. We've got Taja Pitcher, he's got champ. We've got Israel Zidane. We've got all champions coming to you. You've got Volkanovski coming. We've got all the champions coming to you. So long as you didn't even play into it, then.
It has been great to see their ascension. Well, Mark, best of luck this weekend against Alexei Oleinik. I know he's probably going to try to bring you down to the ground. A lot of people have tried that game plan with you, and it hasn't worked. So we'll see how that goes for him, and I wish you all the success.
Well, thanks for having me on the show, and sorry about my French. It's a bit upsetting, but when you bring up something like that, it just makes me angry all the time.
Yeah, I know it's
and
a subject that's...
I don't know why people can't see that. Anyway, thanks for your time. See you, mate.
And from one fighter that fought Fabricio Werdum, unfortunately lost against him, to a fighter who's actually beaten Fabricio Werdum back at UFC 70 over 10 years ago, April 21st, 2007. A guy who's had a lot of heavyweight fights in the UFC and even elsewhere. Joins us now from Moscow, and that would be Andrei Arlovsky, who joins us on the TSN MMA show. He is the former UFC heavyweight champion. He'll be facing Shamil Abdurakhimov in Moscow this weekend. So this is the first UFC event in Russia. Since you've been there, what's the reception been like so far?
Advertising, PR people here, it's like a joke, you know.
Sorry, can you elaborate?
Much TV when I was in studio, it's live, so I was disappointed. I left the studio. But except this one, everything good. People friendly, people nice, so I like it.
Yeah, I saw that. I saw that you were on a live interview in Russia, and... I guess you got up and left. What did they do that rubbed you the wrong way?
You know what? I think, like I said, they probably like try to promote different fighters who not belong to UFC. I understand Emelianenko, he's a star here, but listen, you invited me to promote upcoming event, right? Why you like show my knockouts, show my losses? If I want to discuss with someone my losses, I have professional coaches for this shit, so... To me, it looks like a joke, and to me, I felt like my manager, Leo Karolinski, he told me, he felt like they tried to incite a conflict between me and Russians, you know, because when I did some interview, gave some interview to someone in the press, they just took like from that and a few words, and they makes me look like bad here, like I'm fucking like an idiot, you know, but... The fact I'm half Russian, half Belarusian, and my mom from Russia, so and I have a lot of friends here. I think I'm more Russian than my opponent, so I just didn't understand that move. And I felt bad that I somehow maybe disappointed Mr. White, but I had to left the studio.
And you just feel like
from my understanding, Match TV is a partner for you in Russia, it's main media resource here. So, but it was a joke. They promote different fighters, you know, and a different organization. Why they show some? Fights from Affliction, and somehow maybe they promote the latter here. I don't know. I have no idea what's going on, but I was disappointed, to be honest.
Yes, they were showing, I don't know what they were saying in Russian. I don't understand Russian, but they were showing a lot of your losses, and then they were, what exactly were
only
they saying?
My losses, and I'm fucking like idiot. I thought it's just like, maybe it's just some video, like in studios they can see, but I asked the guy, it's live. He said, oh, it's, of course it's live. What do you think? And that's why I fucking left. That's why I was so disappointed.
Yeah, that's a bad look. That's a bad look for them. I mean,
it's so unprofessional. You know, I'm not a media person, but from my point, it's so unprofessional.
well, you've been doing this for 19 years and you started your career in Russia. It's surprising to me that they wouldn't show you that kind of respect. You're from nearby Belarus. The relations between Russia and Belarus are good.
Like I mentioned before, they I'm an enemy, you know. I don't like Russians, but it's fucking bullshit because my wife Russian. Your parents live in Russia. My parents and my friends live also in Russia and Belarus. I don't know what's going on.
Do you think it's because you live in America now that they assume that about you?
At the same time, America gave me pretty much everything they have right now. I'm employee of UFC. UFC is American company, the biggest fucking MMA promotion in the world. I don't get it. Why they do this?
Yeah, it is very confusing, especially since as you mentioned, you've got a big fan base in that area. Belarus is nearby, and Belarus and Russia are friendly countries.
Of course. They like when the Soviet Union gone, it's divided 15 different countries, and we have all Slavic, all Slavic language. So it's like Ukrainian, Russian, Belarusians pretty much all together.
Well, so you've been back in the UFC for 4 years. You did fight in Affliction, as you mentioned, and the World Series of Fighting, some other organizations. You've had your share of ups and downs since you've been back to the UFC. You went on a bit of a losing streak, and then you went on a winning streak, and then you fared very, very well against one of these the young up-and-comers in the division in Soa Pelele in Chicago, where you live. How much longer do you hope to fight for?
I don't know. I feel great, you know. My body, my mind, let me fight, let me train hard. So I'm kind of person because, first of all, my beautiful wife, she let me do what I love to do. It's my life. So at least I think like 4 or 5 years.
I mean, we see Mark Hunt, his headline, he's 44 years old. So, I mean, he shows there's longevity in heavyweight.
Three guys, like you mentioned, Mark Hunt, Alexei Olenik, myself, like old dinosaurs in UFC. So yeah,
you're actually the third oldest on
but
this
I
card.
I feel great. I feel like I'm 28, so I'm ready to go.
Well, you mentioned that I actually noticed something crazy about your career. You've been fighting for 19 years, and you've never pulled out of a fight beforehand. Yeah. How do you manage to stay so healthy?
I take care of myself, and most important, like my wife should take care of my face. You know, I'm using her cream, so I'm good.
Well, you're lucky to have someone who looks out for you like that.
100%. But I'm telling you, this shit expensive.
So you train at Jackson. Are you still training at Jackson Wing?
No, I have since 2017. I'm training at the ATT American Top Team in Coconut Creek, Florida. And actually, it's funny because my manager, Ibrahim Kalash, he told me like a while ago, you should like come and try to work out. He said, no, I have to drive over there. But listen, better later than never. So I'm happy that I'm right now in ATT. I have a great relationship with some coaches, some guys. So I'm good.
And what's your relationship with Jackson Wink like now? I know Donald Cerrone came out recently. He was pretty outspoken about how he felt the team was going.
I heard this. I still have a great relationship with Greg Jackson. I'm not going to do any comments about situation with Cowboy and Wink. But listen, by the end of the day, it's fucking, I guess it's all about business.
One thing that was interesting.
My friend still was trained with Jackson, so it's complicated, you know?
Yeah, one thing I learned over the weekend from talking to both Jackson and Winklejohn is that Jackson's going to be cornering Cerrone against Perry.
That's
Perry's with Winklejohn.
Yep.
Will that be strange to see as somebody who trained there for a long time?
100%.
Yeah, it's very weird. I mean, I imagine they've coached against each other before because they've promoted events, like smaller events in the region, and they do it just kind of because they have to. But, you know, they each take a fighter. But in this kind of a stage, it's pretty wild that that's going to be happening.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So your opponent Shamil, you mentioned he's from Dagestan. What do you know about him? I know he's had his ups and downs in the UFC as well. He won his last fight with a pretty crazy knockout over Chase Sherman. What have you learned about him, and what do you think your strengths are against him?
Of course, my coach studied him. I watched his last fight as well. He's young. Younger than me, at least dangerous. He's a good wrestler, good striker. So I have a lot of work with my coaches, with striking coach Paulina Hernandez. He's a great wrestling coach, Phil Marcoso. He's been on Conor me first time. Of course, Mike Brown. So I'm in good hands, yeah.
And I've got one of
the great. We have a great great camp. If I'm going to stick with my game plan, it's going to be a good fight for me.
I've got one of your teammates on my show this week. It's Colby Covington. He's a teammate of yours. He's an interesting character. What do you think about he's been saying?
My striking coach, Paulina Hernandez, used to train him. So, and I believe he's the first contender for the title. Yeah.
Yeah, they're saying he's going to get the next title shot. Have you talked to him at all? What do you think of Colby?
No, I didn't talk to him lately.
All right. Well,
my manager, he's managed is Woodley, so it's going to be an interesting fight for me.
Yeah, well, him and Woodley are kind of teammates.
Yes, you can guess who I'm going to lose him for.
So I guess you're managed by Malki Kawa, is that right?
Malki Kawa, Ibrahim Kawa, first round management, correct.
Yeah, very good guys. I like those guys.
I like them too.
Yeah, I'd imagine so. They've been able to get you a lot of money to fight in this sport.
No, it's not funny, but that's true. That's 100% true. That's not exactly what I want, but no complaints.
So we've got a big card in Moscow this weekend. Andrei Arlovsky and Shamil Abdurakhimov. It's on Fight Pass. Andrei, I'm sorry to hear what you're going through in Russia, especially with that one interview. But
it's all good. I felt pretty much the same situation when I fought the Bigfoot in Brazil. You know,
you felt the same way in Brazil.
Good. All good, 100%.
Okay, all right, Andrei. Well, thanks so much for your time. I appreciate it. A former heavyweight champion, Andrei Arlovsky, again fighting this weekend on Fight Pass against Shamil Abdurakhimov.
Thank you all for having me. God bless. Bye bye.
That was Andrei Arlovsky, who will be fighting on UFC Fight Night in Moscow. It's a Fight Pass card this Saturday afternoon, the first ever card in Russia. Main card, Mark Hunt versus Alexei Oleinik. As I mentioned earlier, I think that this is a fight that Mark Hunt has a very clear advantage. On the feet, I just don't think Oleinik will have anything for him. So unless Oleinik can pull guard or grab a leg or something, because that's where Olenek's, you know, bread and butter is at heavyweight. He's very, very crafty. I think Hunt has a pretty clear advantage in this fight. Co-main event, the return of Nikita Krylov. Al Capone taking on Jan Blachowicz. Jan coming off of a very, very good win of his own in his rematch with Jimmy Manoa. Ends up getting the job done by unanimous decision in London, England. And Krylov has had quite the career. Look how many fights. How old is he? He's 26. And is 24-5. Lots of fights under his belt. But coming off back-to-back wins against Fabio Maldonado and Emmanuel Newton, two guys that are pretty big names outside of the UFC right now. His last fight back in Toronto, UFC 206, lost to Misha Serkinov, got choked out. But since then, went 4-0 outside of the organization, and now he returns to fight Jan Blachowicz. And that's going to be a very fun fight. Because Nikita Krylov is seldom in fights that are not a lot of fun. Andrei Arlovsky, who I just spoke to, taking on Shamil Abdurakhimov. This should be interesting. I think this is going to be a very slow-paced heavyweight fight, but Arlovsky shows that he's become a little bit of a smarter fighter. You look what he did against Stefan Struve earlier this year. I know he lost a tie to Tuivasa, but didn't get knocked out by a guy who has a ton of power. Abdurakhimov, I think, has substantially less power than Tai Tuivasa, and we'll see how that fight goes. Because Arlovsky, I think, might be a craftier fighter than Abdurakhimov. Alexei Kunchenko, big time prospect, undefeated. A lot of people are raving about this guy. He takes on Thiago Alves at welterweight. You know, Alves he tried to make 155 that one time. That didn't go well. It was 7 pounds, 8 pounds overweight almost. Then lost to Jim Miller. Got that win against Patrick Cote. Started to show some signs of life again last year. And then got knocked out by Curtis Millender, the first fighter to knock him out. I know he has a TKO loss on his record to Condit, but that was a doctor stoppage. So inside of the distance. I guess, and John Fitch knocked him out also back in the day. I stand corrected. That's going to be an interesting one because I think Kunchenko's a guy that we should be watching as an up-and-coming prospect. Short-notice opponent for CB Dalloway and Khalid Murtazaliev. I would tell you I know something about him, but I don't, and I don't want to lie to you. Another short notice opponent, Jin Su Sun, taking on Peter Yan, one of the top prospects in the UFC. Peter Yan is 25 years old, heck of a fighter. Beat Ishihara by knockout in the first round in his last fight, and I don't think that Jin Su Sun is going to have a very good night, a good afternoon Eastern time or night in Moscow. Hustam Khabilov taking on Cajun Johnson. And this is right after Cajun Johnson lost to Islam Makhachev. So they're just putting up against these really, you know, these Dagestani killers. Cajun Johnson, a huge underdog again. This is the third straight fight that he's been a huge underdog. He won one of them against Adriana Martins last year. Actually, so it's not the third fight, the third straight fight. He also had that fight against Stevie Ray that he won earlier in the year. And then he lost to Islam Makhachev by submission, if I recall, and now he's against Khabilov. So big underdog in this spot, too. We've seen Cajun Johnson perform as a big underdog. We'll see what happens with him. The only Canadian on the card. Mirbek Taisimov returns, finally. He's been having all these visa issues, and he's just fighting in Russia now. So he doesn't have to worry about these visa issues. Hasn't fought since September of last year. Riding four straight knockouts. Taking on Desmond Green. Desmond Green was in a pretty unfortunate situation, I believe, last month. Got into a bad car accident that resulted in the loss of someone's life. And I'm surprised he's still on this card, to be honest. I'm very surprised. But alas, he fights Mirbek Taisimov. And then you've got two huge prospects at light heavyweight. You got Magomed Ankalaev and Marcin Prachnio, both coming off losses. Ankalaev with that last-second Hail Mary loss to Paul Craig by submission, and I think it was within the last 5 seconds of the fight. And then Marcin Prachnio got knocked out by Sam Alvey after he was a big favorite. So one of these guys is going to bounce back and establish himself as a prospect in this division. And then you've got Jordan Johnson against Adam Yandiev. Ramazan Amiev returning. He's facing Stefan Sekulic and Merab Dvalishvili against our next guest, and that's Therion Ware. Now, Therion Ware keeps getting thrown these really, really tough opponents. Tom Dukinois, Sean O'Malley, and Cody Stamann. Those are three really, really tough opponents. He's 0-3 in the UFC, and now he fights another tough opponent in Merab Dvalishvili, discovered on Dana White looking for a fight, trains under Matt Serra, Team Serra Longo. Coming off a very, very controversial loss against Ricky Simon. And I really disliked the way that fight ended, because they handed Dvalishvili a loss. It was a fight that he was clearly winning 2-1. They hand him the loss, and he never tapped out and was never out cold. It was very confusing. But I will ask Therion about that, as well as some other things, as Therion Ware joins us now on the TSN MMA show. Joining me now, Therion Flash Ware. You know, no easy fights for this guy. He's got Merab Dvalishvili this weekend in UFC Moscow. How are you, Therion?
I'm doing great. How are you guys?
I'm great. How's Moscow treating you? It's the first UFC event in Russia. How's the reception been?
It's pretty cool. It's nice. Everyone's kind of like kind of serious, though, but it's been pretty cool.
Yeah, I was going to ask, any sort of culture shock from being in Russia? I imagine you haven't been before.
A little bit, yeah. Things are a little bit different. Things are definitely written differently, but it's pretty cool.
You're 0-3 in the UFC, but you've been putting on very exciting fights, so they've kept you on the roster. Is this one do or die?
I mean, that's the mindset that I'm going into it with. I'm pretty sure. I mean, not a lot of guys hang around afterwards, you know, if they... You know, you lose too many, so that's the mindset that I have.
You know, you were a very successful fighter on the regional scene. It just seems like they keep putting these up-and-coming prospects against you. Is that something that you embrace, knowing that you can take the wind out of someone's sail?
Yeah, absolutely. But also the way I look at it as well, too, is they also see me as a young and up-and-coming prospect as well, too. And they're putting me in these matchups where, you know, it's going to be competitive, it's going to be exciting. I just haven't, you know... Luck hasn't really gone my way that much, unfortunate, and especially my last fight. I thought I won, but it is what it is, and now I have an opportunity to go and start correcting that.
You're working with George Lockhart this camp and his team. How has that changed things? It seems like you're walking around a little bit lighter from what I've seen on Twitter.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely makes the weight cut easier, definitely makes the stress of being in another country, trying to find, you know, what to eat, what's good to eat and stuff like that, you know, having them out here and just, you know, being able to just chill in my hotel and just bring food up to me, you know, makes it a lot easier. Takes the stress off of one thing that, I mean, fight week is always stressful as it is. So to have one less thing to be stressful about, makes it a lot easier.
Yeah, you were walking around pretty light about a week ago. I saw on Twitter you were down to, what, like 146 or something along those lines. So has this been a fairly easy cut?
No, I mean, none of the cuts are ever easy. I was down to about 47. But then when you come over here on the plane and stuff like that, and you're trying to, like, water load, your body kind of holds on to water a little bit. So that makes it a little bit harder with travel. But having these guys, it's definitely made it easier. I mean, I'm dropping weight, you know, quickly without much effort.
As I mentioned, you're fighting Mirab Dvalishvili. This guy's an excellent wrestler. When you fought Cody Stamann, he took you down 8 times. Has that been a big point of emphasis in this camp?
Absolutely. I mean, that's been a big point of emphasis in my entire career, just because I didn't have any really grappling experience. You know, when I came into MMA, I had striking experience. So I've been trying to catch up, since I, you know, started my MMA career. And then, Cody's a very, very high-level wrestler, and he's able to take me down. And same thing with this guy. So the emphasis has been working on my wrestling, you know, not just for this camp, but for past fights as well, too.
You're from L.A. The UFC was in L.A. for UFC 227. Is that a card that you would hope to get on?
Yeah, I asked for it, it had filled up, and I guess I had other ideas or whatever the case may be. But hopefully in the future I'll be able to get on another one that's down here either in Anaheim or in L.A.
You fought both Sean O'Malley and Tom Duken. While both are considered among the top prospects at bantamweight, which of those guys do you think is going to have a better career?
I think Sean. Fighting them both, I think Sean was the more talented one. Tom's very talented as well, too. Don't get me wrong, but between the two, I would say Sean.
Is there anybody in the bantamweight division that you think you match up favorably with if you do get a win against Mirab? Somebody that you'd want to call out?
Not off the top of my head. I haven't really thought about it. I mean, there's a couple fun fights that I would like, and a couple fights that I think I would match up with. Benito Lopez is one of them, I think, as well as Andre Sukumantov. I think those are two fun fights and two fights I think I would match up well.
One other thing I wanted to ask you about before I let you go is you were talking a little bit on Twitter about this Nike situation, about Colin Kaepernick and the ad campaign. It seems like you've taken a lot of offense to these, well, not really offense, but you're surprised by all these people burning shoes and burning Nike stuff. What do you think it says about the climate of the U.S. when you see that kind of thing?
I just think a lot of people are just triggered over little things nowadays. I mean, you know, they're burning shoes because they back an athlete or something like that. I mean, I think that's pretty ridiculous. But, you know, it is what it is. And I just think it's just dumb. I mean, they're burning stuff that they already paid for.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned you could give those shoes to charity. That's the kind of the thing that sticks out to me. Are these people just looking for attention? Is that why they're burning shoes?
That's what it seems like. So I don't know. But, yeah, I mean, they could give that. If they don't want the shoes, they could give it away to, you know, people who are in need. But, hey, you know, it's. I just think it's dumb.
And finally, again, with Mirab, is there anything you think you can exploit with him from watching his fights? I think his last fight was kind of ridiculous that he ended up losing that fight. I don't know if you saw what had happened there or have any thoughts on that, but is there anything about his game you feel like you can exploit?
Yeah, I mean, I think in a stand-up, he swings very wildly. He just can open in the air. And I think my stand-up is the best part of my game, and definitely think I could take him out using that.
What did you think of his last fight, about him losing with 0 seconds left in the third round with that choke?
I don't know. It's hard to tell. Like, it seemed like in his last fight, he went out on the takedown on the climb. He went out a couple different times, and the referee didn't notice, didn't see. And then at the end of the fight, you know, it seemed like he was still out as well, too, for a couple seconds. So, you know, the referee made the call that he was out when the fight ended.
I don't know. I feel like that was really a weird precedent to set in MMA, because he didn't tap. He was in and out, as you mentioned. And then once the hold was let go of, he was still on the ground, but he seemed like he had his wits about him. And then I guess someone cage side made the decision that the fight was over. But isn't that kind of counterintuitive to how the sport works? I mean, it's not like he was knocked out or anything along those lines. He was able to get up pretty much right away. I just thought that was particularly strange.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is one of those things I don't think we've ever seen before. They didn't really know what to do, and I don't know, somebody made a call, but, I don't know. It's definitely weird.
All right, Terry-Ann, well, I appreciate your time. Best of luck this weekend. It's a UFC in Moscow, the first ever card in Russia for the UFC, and you happen to be on it. You get to grace that card. So best of success this weekend, and again, very tough opponent as they keep throwing them at you. But you haven't shied away from any of them, so best of luck this weekend.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it.
That was Terry-Ann Ware. Wow, I'm tired. That's a lot of guests. You know, I'm not Ariel Helwani. I can't have 9 guests on in a show and maintain that kind of energy that he does. I don't know how he does it. I'm already exhausted. But it was great speaking to all of those different fighters. A lot of interesting stuff. I hope you don't mind profanity, because there was a lot of it there. If you like profanity, this was the show for you. Kudos. So thanks to all of my guests, Terry-Ann Ware, Mark Hunt, Colby Covington, and Andrei Arlovsky. I believe Joe's back next week. Glory's got a stacked schedule. They're running this guy through the ringer. But we'll have a lot to discuss after this Conor and Khabib press conference, and I look forward to chatting with him about it. Expect that sometime early next week if you subscribe to the podcast. Otherwise, you can catch us on Fridays on TSN Radio in Toronto, and I believe we're on Saturdays, TSN Radio in Ottawa. So thanks to those listening live on radio. We appreciate that. This has been the TSN MMA Show. We'll be back next week with more great UFC talk.
Thanks for listening to the TSN MMA Show. For all the latest UFC news, visit tsn.ca/UFC.